You are listening to KDUX Web Radio, broadcasting live from Richland College in Dallas, Texas. We're the voice of Richland College. My name is Raymond Thomas Pronk. Views expressed on this show are my own, unless otherwise stated, and do not reflect the opinion of anyone at KDUX, Richland College, or the DCCD. This is my last show for November, the pre-Thanksgiving show. It'll probably be anywhere from 30 minutes to an hour, depending on the scheduling, because a lot of the faculty and staff are trying to leave today, even though the computer labs are open to 10 o'clock, both Multimedia and Del Rio. So there are students still on campus, still going in class, but the majority of the students have taken off for their Thanksgiving holiday, either visiting parents or flying to visiting parents. So the campus is relatively quiet today, and noticeably less crowded, yet there are people on campus. And we have an update. If you listen to, I believe, the last show, the Richland Chronicle office, or one of the offices in the Richland Chronicle, has a rat problem. Apparently, a rat is coming down from the ceiling down and eating snacks. So what's happened is, this is the second day, we set a trap last night, and the rat got in the trap, ate the goodies, and then escaped. But apparently, there was some blood. So if you know anything about rats or mice, they will, if they're trapped, eat off a limb to get out of it, to survive. And there was some blood. So I wanted to update you on that, because there are rats that really depend upon the students' garbage and snacks to eat. They hide up, at least in Richland College. They hide in the ceilings, and we do occasionally have to lay the trap. And these traps are really, they're flat pieces of paper with glue, sticky substance on them. And we've set half a dozen of these papers out where they would normally, the rat would come down and look for the snacks. And we think we're going to catch them. There's only one big problem, and it is a big problem. This is a holiday. The campus will be closed for Thanksgiving, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. So except for the maintenance staff that does check for example, leaks, should it rain, or there are a number of servers that they have to periodically dump the water from, all the buildings are going to be closed. So there will be no faculty, staff, or students on campus, and I'm making you aware of that in case you're new to Richland College, that don't bother to come to the campus either Thursday, Friday, Saturday, or Sunday, because all the buildings will be locked down, and the police do patrol, and if you're caught in the buildings, should you find an open door, you could be written up and fined $75. So don't make any trips to this campus during those next days. The campus will reopen on December 2nd at 6 o'clock in the morning. But the problem we have with the rat is, if let's say the rat comes back to look for some goodies, he might get stuck, and if he dies, guess what? It's going to really smell in that office come Monday. So we're dealing with at least a one rat problem in the Richland Chronicle office. And for the rat, it's called the Richland Rat Restaurant. And you can get anything you want at the Richland Rat Restaurant. There's a famous song about Alice's restaurant. Well, this is the Richland Rat's restaurant. And I know there's some goodies out there. There's some nuts and cashews and candy bars. We're trying to entice the rat to come back and get stuck. And then meet his fate, die on Thanksgiving in the offices of the Richland Chronicle. Well, I hope that doesn't take your appetite away, but we always have a pest problem, and here even Richland College has a pest problem with a pesky rat. Now, I want to talk about something that I was driving into the studio today. I was listening to Rush Limbaugh. He was talking about the popes. He issued, not an encyclical, I forget what they call this, an apostolic vision. It was a paper. He came out with a 50,000-word, it's over 200-page document. And part of it And the document dealt with various aspects of the Catholic Church, but he really attacked capitalism. So I'm going to be talking about that because it doesn't surprise me, but it's very rather disappointing. Because the problem is not unfettered capitalism. We have not had unfettered capitalism, I would say, almost anywhere in the world, with very, very few exceptions. But he's trying to make the case that the problem is unfettered capitalism. No, the problem, sir, is not unfettered capitalism. It's unfettered government. It's out-of-control government spending throughout the world, especially the so-called developed world, the industrialized world, is out of control. And what's going to be happening over the next decades, it's going to fail. See, the failure is not of capitalism. The failure is of the welfare state, the mixed economy. And to blame it on, to blame the inequalities in any society on capitalism is really misplaced, doesn't understand capitalism, doesn't understand economics. And it really sounds like a Marxist tract. And I'm sure whoever wrote this for him, now usually they'll say the Pope wrote it, and part of it, I'm sure he did, but large parts were written by his staff, and they're not known for being favorable to free enterprise or capitalism. And you got to remember, through long parts of the history of the Catholic Church, they were aligned with absolute monarchs, the governments of the time, the emperors, the kings, the queens, the princes. And what do we have for not decades, hundreds of years? We had mass poverty, subsistence. Why, at that same time, we had a partnership between the church and the state, or in many countries, the monarchs. We had absolute monarchs. Didn't see much publications of we need to do something for the poor. So I'm not very, very sympathetic to this Pope Francis's announcement and pointing fingers at capitalism. There are many things I agree with in this paper, and I have not read all 50,000 words. I've really gotten summaries of it, and until I have an opportunity to really read, if not the whole thing, at least good. It takes at least 5 or 6 hours to read this whole thing, so, and I didn't have 5 hours to prepare. But anyway, Rush Limbaugh, driving in, was discussing that. And I was on my way to Richland College on a side road to a major highway in Dallas, and I noticed as I was making the turn onto Abrams to go north into Richland College, I saw, I won't say a homeless person, I don't know if they're homeless, but a beggar, a woman on the side of the road with one of these cardboard signs. Now, I couldn't read the sign. It wasn't pointed in my direction. But it was obviously asking for either food or money. Now, what you need to understand in Dallas, that can get you a big ticket or could get you a trip to the jail, depending on how the officer handles it. Whoever was doing this, and it's fairly cold out, so it's not a nice sunny day. It's a cold day. And the person obviously had a coat on, but this person, this was, I believe, a woman, was begging for donations. Can you help me out? Can you give me a buck? Can you give me $5, $20, whatever? Now, I was on the other lane from her, so she didn't run over to me, but that usually what's happened. It's a red light, and that's why she was there. There was traffic going. I was on the side road. This is a major side road where it's two lanes. If you travel to Richland College, a lot of people go through this side road. It's just above Forest. So it gets a lot of traffic and also has good visibility as to what's coming. Now, what you need to understand, this area of Dallas, and I live in this area of Dallas, is really patrolled heavily by the Dallas Police Department. As a matter of fact, they typically have a speed trap in that area because this is a major interstate road. It's LBJ, for those that are familiar with it, and it's just before 75. So this is heavily trafficked. Many speeders are caught, and I've seen it. I mean, a couple of weeks ago on a Sunday, well, not a couple of weeks ago, I think it was a week ago, I was going somewhere, now on a different part, same major highway, but several streets over. I saw three cop cars lined up, ready to give someone tickets. They were waiting for someone to be driving on this section of the highway, and it's like, I think, four to six lanes. It's a big major road in Dallas. It's at least four lanes, if not five or six. I haven't counted it. I stay off that road because if there's an accident, you could really be jammed up. But I saw a bunch of cops, cop cars, three cars. They're waiting. And I knew what they were doing. They've set up a speed trap, so if you go by fast, those cop cars are going to go after you. And they do this all the time. I see it in the day, and I see it in the evening. It's a favorite place for the police, the Dallas Police Department, to catch speeders, and that's what they're doing. I'll go home tonight, and this area has police all the time. Someone is pulled over. So you're smart to be under 40 miles an hour and really stay out of the area. I'm really surprised because this is a new neighborhood for me, and I've never seen so many police cars in this area. And and what they're doing is just raising revenue for the city of Dallas, and it's highly patrolled. That's most of what they're doing. I don't know if they have a special traffic division or anything, but it's a big, huge speed trap. So if you travel through Dallas and are on LBJ 635, especially near approaching 75 from either direction, watch out, because the cop cars are always there day and night. I've seen this. You know, I've seen it coming home at 10, 11 o'clock at night. They're there. You know, there's a gas station right on the corner on this side road, and I'm not kidding. At least a dozen times I've seen police pull people off. They get in the side road and they come off. They park in the gas station. The cop comes over to them and is giving them a ticket. Anyway, so I'm going into the college campus. I see this lady, and Rush Limbaugh's going on about the Pope. And I started to think, you know, this person could be homeless, or could be living in a car, or could be living in a small apartment. Now, what you don't know, and this is what you need to keep in mind, and this is a hard one, even for me, there are many of people that make good money doing what this lady was doing, clearing $100 or $200 or more a day. It's not easy work. You're out there with a sign, can you help? And if someone gives $5 and you multiply by 20, that's $100. And if you stay there for 4 or 5 hours, you're going to collect some money. I don't know how much. I would say $20, $40, $60. And if you do that every day, you can do the math. It adds up. You know, $5 a day, 30 days, gives $150. Multiply that by 10. That's $1,500. You see what I'm trying to say? And some of these people are couples. You know, a woman will go here, the man will go here, and they can rake in a lot of money. And that's the problem I have with it. Now, some of them, I'm sure, are poor. They're homeless, they're living in a car, or if they're lucky, have a small apartment. But their career is begging. Some do very well at it, some do not. So it's not easy. You see, the problem I have is there are people out there that are truly needy. There are people out there that would much prefer having a full-time job or even a part-time job and can't find it. And you got to keep in mind, I can remember when it was fairly common in the United States for the husband to work full-time and the wife, if there were children, to stay home full-time. And you could have a very comfortable living doing that. Now, almost, I would say, virtually all households, people can't do that. And usually what happens is the husband works full-time and either the wife works part-time or full-time, and they use daycare. Why do they need two jobs? I'll tell you why they need two jobs. Is the tax burden on the American people has gone up, up, and up. And it's not only at the federal level, it's also at the state and city level as well. Government has gotten bigger and bigger and bigger. And it's worse in Europe. It's worse in France. France is one of the worst. The burdens of government have become so huge that people are really serfs or slaves to the government. They're working for the government 4, 5, 6 months out of the year. That's not the way it used to be. Government used to be small up until about 1930. With the exception of war, the federal government was less than 3%, And if you add up all the other governments, city, county, state, and federal, add them all together, it was less than 10%. Today in the United States, it's over 35%. And in some countries, it's over 50%, heading towards 60. I believe in France, it's 55% if you add up. And most of that is the national government, but they have provinces as well. The problem is a failure of government. And I want to weave both segments together. I think the Pope has misdiagnosed the problem. We don't have unfettered capitalism. What we have is as a corrupt, and I agree with the Pope here, a corrupt partnership of government and corporation. Call it crony capitalism. And see, at one time, it wasn't crony capitalism. It was cronyism between the monarchs and the Catholic Church. Yes, there's always going to be the well-intentioned, well-meaning people, and I'm sure the Pope is one of them. But I always emphasize, good intentions are not enough. Results count. And our welfare state, the so-called mixed economy, has gotten bigger and bigger and bigger, putting a burden on people in the lower income brackets. Now, one of the problems, and this is the paradox, today, at least 60 million, some would say half of the population of the United States, depending on what you want to count, is getting some form of welfare or check from the federal government. What we've had, and I was what sort of triggered this segment that I'm getting into, is I was reading an article saying the press, the television media, big media, your major newspapers such as the Washington Post, Los Angeles Times, New York Times, and your television networks are trying to look for success stories about Obamacare. So I said, okay, that's interesting. I'll be on the lookout for that. And what was interesting, I was listening, preparing for the show, but listening to, in the background, Fox. And they had a segment, I think this was on the Cavuto show, as to whether or not you should bring up Obamacare at the Thanksgiving meal. In other words, bring up politics at the Thanksgiving meal. I would say, why not? But I think you're going to get a rather, how should I say this, depending on the politics of who's visiting, probably a heated discussion. It's probably a topic that if you want a peaceful and quiet Thanksgiving dinner, you probably shouldn't mention. Because I'll tell you this, people are mad about Obamacare, outraged about Obamacare. Forget about the success stories. Why are they mad about Obamacare? Well, if they're individuals that bought their own coverage, their plans that most of them are happy with, satisfied with, have been canceled. And their new plans, to the extent they've been able to enroll, are much more expensive. They have to be more expensive because they cover a lot more. And they also cover people that have serious pre-existing conditions. So people have what many have called, including myself, sticker shock. So they're mad about it. Because people try to arrange their lives to live within their means, to have a budget. It does take time to shop for and buy wisely a health insurance plan. I used to sell both individual and group, mainly group, small group. And I'll tell you that, because I used to help or assist individuals, but mainly small business owners, find a plan that fit the business's requirements, where affordability was a key and very, very important aspect. Now, what's happening, and it's already happening, they had another segment I was listening to. Actually, I think it was the same. Cavuto was interviewing someone else after this, where it was a lady who was explaining her situation. Now, she didn't have individual coverage. So Cavuto asked several questions, but here's the important point, and I have touched upon this in a previous show, and I'll mention this first. Many people that have, many businesses, especially small businesses, that already have an existing plan, if they've been well advised, like from someone when I was in the business, they were told they could change the anniversary date from whenever it was this year to December of next year. December 1st is the date I hear they could change it to. Now, not every carrier or insurance company was willing to do this, but a lot of the big ones were. And what they were being advised to is to extend their anniversary date. And many of them did this because what I think she had Kaiser Permanente. Very popular in California, and I think that's where the lady was from. Anyway, Cavuto asked her, well, is this as a result of Obama saying you can extend? No. The business owner decided, with the help of his insurance agency, insurance agent, to extend that date, and he did, to next year. So at least for another year, they with the same deduct, the same plan that they have now. And I suspect the premium went up or will go up for next year, but they can keep the same plan. They don't have to worry until next December, about this time, to go with one of the more expensive metallic plans that now the individual market is having to contend with. Now, I'm bringing this up just sort of as a review. Why most of the attention up to now has been on the so-called exchanges and the healthcare.gov website that supposedly it's not going to be working perfect on the 30th of November, which is happens to be this Saturday. They sort of lowered the expectations or bar as to what the capability of the healthcare.gov site will be. Supposedly, it should be able to handle a volume of about 50,000. At least that's what they're saying. It's not all the problems have been fixed. And you do have, they did make one important change. The open enrollment period is through March, but you originally had to December 15th to enroll in a plan to have it become effective 1 January. Now they've given you an extra week to the 23rd of December. You have to the 23rd of December to enroll in a plan if you want it to start on 1 January. And since many plans are terminated at the end of this year, and if you want no lapse in coverage or no gap in coverage, that's what you're having to do. So from now until the 23rd, you're going to see a large volume of people. Remember, there are different estimates, but anywhere from 15 to 20 million or even more people have individual coverage. And will have to do something if they want coverage, have no gap in coverage. And I recently, last night, actually yesterday, I had some insurance to take care of. I had to renew my renter's insurance, which I did over the telephone. It took me about total. And remember, it's one of these automatic systems. And these systems drive me nuts because I knew I had to speak to a representative. I knew it, but I had to go through this menu, and these systems drive me nuts. They should have an option. They never do. Do you need to talk to a representative? I knew I needed to talk to a representative because I wanted to make a change in how I paid for this coverage. And there was no way I could do this pushing buttons or answering questions. So it took me probably a good 4 minutes to get to, and that's pretty good. I got lucky. I finally got someone, and it took me another maybe 2 minutes max, so a total of maybe 6 minutes total, 5 to 6 minutes, to make the change I wanted to do. Now keep in mind, I already had coverage. I just had a change in how I wanted to pay for it, and I accomplished that. So my renter's insurance is in force, and will go on for another year, and they'll make money, and I won't have a claim. But I'll have some peace of mind. If there's a fire or flood or robbery, I'll have some benefit. Now, why do I have the coverage? Because my apartment complex requires me to have the coverage. And I say that I probably could have get away with it for a year. They really didn't do a good job when I renewed my lease. They didn't ask me, and I know why they didn't ask me, because my insurance was not up until November, but I wouldn't be surprised if between now and next year they asked me for proof that I have coverage, which I do. Okay, I had to take some insurance. I did that in 6 minutes, not hours, not days, not repeated attempts, one time. called one time, and the guy was very polite, courteous, asked the right questions, and I was somewhat abrupt. I answered yes, no, gave him the information. I wanted to get this done. I was in a hurry. I wanted to get this done. I had to get it done, and I needed to go someplace. But that is the expectation of millions of Americans. We don't want to waste our time. Time is valuable. I don't have hours to spend making minor changes. And keep in mind, I already have my insurance. That's example number one. Example number two, I needed to change my insurance carrier. And I don't want to get too much of the detail, but I knew I was paying too much for my auto insurance. And I'm not going to give a plug to the company, but I went to another insurance company online. I didn't talk to anybody. I wanted to get an insurance quote. Now, they had most of my information. I was a previous customer of them, but I was changing insurance company, and they had my information. I want to make it so you understand. Now, I still had to type in my name, the car I had, the vehicle number. They already had the vehicle number. But I had to type in some information. And this was all online. No phone call. I could have done it by phone call. But because of my early experience, I said, I'd rather not talk to anybody in this stupid menu that you got to go through. I'll do it online. And I knew I wanted to get a quote, and I knew I needed to do something. Either I could pay another month's premium with the other carrier and pay a lot more money, or I could switch to this company. And I didn't know what the policy premium was going to be. So I filled out all the information, and they said, this will take a few minutes. And within less than a minute, I had a quote. It will cost you so much money to insure. This is a car that I leased. I said, okay, I want it. Gave them payment information. Gave them basically my bank, not only my bank account number, but the routing number. And you have the routing number, then my account number. And said, okay. I printed a copy of the confirmation that I had paid for it. Now, I had some little problem with the insurance card. In Texas, they're required to mail them to you, which they will, and I probably will get that Saturday. And it took me a little longer because they said they would email, and it wasn't showing up. And I finally found why. I supposedly supposed to press a button that wasn't working, and I went back to the site. I want to give you the experience from beginning to end. Within 15 minutes, even with the problem with the insurance card, or proof of insurance, which was a minor glitch. I've dealt with this company before, and this is the first time I had any problem getting the card, and part of it was my own fault. 15 minutes tops. It probably was less than that. I got it taken care of. I'm insured. I got it in my wallet, and Saturday I'll get a nice printed one on blue paper. That maybe will give you a hint who the carrier is. Anyway, that's the way business is done today in America. At one time, we didn't have the internet, but a lot of things had to happen to get to that point, whether it's through the telephone or through the internet. You had to have a lot of innovation. And I don't have a landline anymore. I have a cell phone because to me, it's the cheapest way. I hardly use the phone. I used to be in sales where I was on the phone all the time. Making calls, I avoid. And it's not that I don't like people or like to talk to people. I like to talk to people all the time. And some would say I talk too much. I understand that. But I really avoid the phone. But I have a cell phone, cheap, pay for it. It's one of the no contracts. But that took a lot of innovation for me to carry my phone on me right now. I'm touching it as I'm speaking to you. It took decades to develop. Remember, one time, 100 years ago, we didn't have telephones. They came in really big time in the 1920s, but it was years before you had a high percentage of American homes having it. Now everybody, literally almost everybody, has a phone. And I'm willing to bet that person that was on that corner with a cardboard sign asking for money for food. I'm willing to bet that person has a cell phone. Now, they probably hide it so you can't see it. But in America today, not throughout the world, but in America, as well as most of the industrialized, developed countries, most people have cell phones, and they're carrying them, and that's important. Also, 20 years ago, the internet wasn't around. It was being developed. We had the ARPANET, and it mainly linked college campuses. But today, you can literally watch video online, movies, get the latest news, and that's how I was preparing for my show today. I went online, and you can transact business, buy things, buy stuff. Why? Is it because of government? Not really. Not really. And I know there's some research that the government is involved in that. The government does fund some very basic research. And yes, part of the internet was a government program out of the Defense Department. But what really enabled and really took off what we call the internet or the web today, it was millions of Americans developing different aspects of it. Websites, the ability for me to go on and do a transaction to buy insurance. And that was not an easy process. I didn't talk to anybody. It was automated. That requires computers with databases. And I know they were running some checks. They can easily check, do I have a driver's license in Texas? They do that check. And is my license suspended? Can I legally drive in Texas? That's one of the automated checks. I know they do, and most insurance companies do. They won't sell you insurance if your license is suspended. But that was all automated. They did that check, and they had all this set up. So in less than a minute, I got my quote, and a total of really in less than 10 minutes, and I would think about 5 or 6 minutes at most, I had insurance. The only thing that took a little longer was the cards, because I wanted to get a printout so at least I'd have it between now and, let's say, Saturday or the latest Monday when I got the card in the mail. It's not really a card. It's a piece of paper that tells who your carrier is, has your car number on it. So if you're ever stopped by a police officer, and you can see why I was a little bit antsy about not having a card, because I live in an area where the police are all over the place, and it's largely giving out tickets for speeding or traffic violation. I'm not exaggerating it here. Now, I know why, because it's on a major interstate road. The sheer volume of you're going to find a speeder, and they know it, and the cops are ready. And all they're doing is giving tickets out. I'm sure they have quotas and raising revenue for the city of Dallas. The joys of living in Dallas. You can get a speeding ticket. If you're really good at it, you get one every day. So you better have insurance and your registration inspection tickets. We have, for those that are out of state that are listening, right on the front windshield, it shows whether your car has been inspected and when, and your registration. So they know right ahead if it has the wrong combination of year and month, they can stop you for that and write you a ticket. And unfortunately, that's the society that we live in today, where the government is hungry for money. So hungry, they are flooding Dallas with cops to go out and collect it. Doesn't that give you a warm feeling? I always keep thinking, don't they have something better to do? Now, I'm not against speeding, folks, but we have crime in Dallas. And I wish they would focus the resources, scarce resources, of our police department on serious crime. And I'm not kidding, there were three police cars sitting on the side road, not the one I was driving in today, but another one a week ago. And I know why they were there. It overlooks this highway, and it's a straight shot. If they see us, they obviously were running a speed trap. And if you got caught, they called one of these cars ahead and launched that police. So they at least had four units. They probably had more than that to begin with. And they were just waiting for the next speeder. The joys of big government in Dallas, Texas, and a big police department. I would hope that less resources would be allocated to that than really to go after serious crime. It's not going to happen, because all over this country today, because of the poor economic recovery, you have city after city. Police officers are writing tickets. I'm on a campus, the same problem. There are several offices on the campus that have a reputation of writing tickets. It's not a friendly atmosphere. It's not. It's a very hostile atmosphere because some students can't find jobs, and they're trying to improve their situation by going to a community college. But if they go to the campus and they have a expired registration or inspection, they probably will get a ticket. And if they don't have insurance, they'll get another ticket. And it's going to cost them a lot of money that they don't have. And it's not that they're trying to flagrantly disregard the law. It's just when they were working, they could afford the car, they could afford the insurance, they could afford the registration, they could afford the inspection. But they're down on their luck. They're still trying to improve themselves. And guess what? They come to the campus. They're rolling the dice every time because this campus is well patrolled. And I can remember many years ago, it wasn't that situation. We didn't have cops all over them. We didn't have cameras all over them. We didn't have magnetic doors. And I would almost have to scratch my head trying to remember when I saw a police officer. Now that's not the case. And I'm sure Richland is not alone. Government has gotten bigger and bigger, both locally at the college level as well as at the federal level. Government spending is totally out of control, totally out. And that's where I think the Pope, despite his good intentions, is totally missing the point. The problem is not unfettered capitalism. The problem is government failure, government failure. The United States and its people are probably one of the most generous people in the world. They give billions of dollars to charity. What has happened is government has become really almost hostile to charity. They want government to replace what both the church used to do as well as charities still do. And that is help the poor, help the needy, help the blind and disabled in your community. Instead, that has been replaced largely, even in the United States, by major government programs, welfare programs, such as Medicaid. Medicaid, for those that are unfamiliar with it, was passed in 1965 when President Johnson launched his so-called war on poverty. You see, the Democratic Party, as well as the progressives and liberals, that time they liked to call themselves liberals. Today they call themselves progressives. What they're for is government intervention. We need a government law, regulation, tax to help the poor. Who could be against that? Where has that led? You see, what they wanted at the time, starting with Roosevelt, continuing through Truman, was universal health coverage, where the government had a monopoly on funding and providing health insurance. They were the only game in town. That's what they're after. Today, they call it single payer. And they'd like to say, well, we're the only industrial country today that doesn't have universal health coverage. That's largely true. What they don't tell you is country after country after country, the welfare state is bankrupting these countries, where they have confiscatory tax rate. The Pope got on that. People are not paying their taxes. Well, I know Italy has a major problem in that regard, but why aren't they paying their taxes? Government has become a burden on everybody. Government is the problem, sir, not unfettered capitalism. I would be hard pressed to come up with any place you have in the entire world you have unfettered capitalism. Almost all of the industrialized, developed nations have a welfare state to one degree or another. They're all mixed, so-called mixed economies. The key to improving something is you have to identify what the problem is. First and foremost, you have to make a correct diagnosis. The problem, Pope, is not unfettered capitalism. The problem has been as it has been in the past, as it is today, and as it will be in the future, is government, massive government. Most of the deaths in the world in the last 100 to 200 years is government. It is war and killing their own people. It's not capitalism. Do I have to mention the Soviet Union under communism, and China still under communism, and Argentina, where the Pope was, it's a fascist state, or was, where you had an unholy alliance between corporations and the government. That's collectivism. The problem is collectivism. That's the major category. And it's the state that's out of control or unfettered. It is the state that is crushing individual initiative. What is made for prosperity, not only in the United States or worldwide, is capitalism, is free market capitalism. Not socialism, not communism, not the welfare state, not any version of collectivism by the state. That's a fact. That's the history. They haven't worked. They've killed people by the millions, hundreds of millions, and they're bankrupting society. And how bad is it in the United States today? And it is bad. It's estimated that somewhere between 60 and 70 million people qualified last year for at least 1 month for Medicaid. Now, Medicaid doesn't mean they got health coverage or services. It just means they qualify for it. That's a lot of people. And I think that's a shame, because I've said it in previous shows, the answer is not more and more government, because it hasn't worked. It hasn't worked. Good. You know, you can always say, you know, I really feel for that person on that corner. We need a government program to have subsidized housing for that person, subsidized medicine or health care for that person, food stamps for that person, on and on and on. Who pays for this? Who pays for this? The hardworking Americans that have one or two jobs, where the wife and the husband work, because they have to, because anywhere from 5 or 6 months of the year, they're paying taxes at all levels. It's not unfettered capitalism that's the problem. It is out of control, unfettered, big government, big interventionist government that is simply out of control, and it's worldwide, and the Pope wants a one world government. I think it's time for the Catholic Church and the people in the Vatican to learn some economics, learn some economic history, and ask yourself, why is the United States the most prosperous nation in the entire world? There are a few that on a per capita basis that are better. I understand that. It is largely because through most of our history, at least through 1930, government was small in this country, and you had capitalism. It doesn't mean the government wasn't involved in the development of the United States. They were very much involved, especially in the transportation area. Early was canals and then railroads. I'm not for no government. I'm for limited government, because I know where you do have, if not unfettered capitalism, at least what's called laissez-faire, or a large free market economy, that gives you the most prosperity. The problem has been the progressives and liberals, both of the Democratic Party and the Republican Party, year in, year out, think that the answer to the problems in the United States are more government programs that require more taxes and more regulation. Hasn't seemed to work, has it? Now, you can be... I'm sure there are liberals listening to this show. They're going to say, are you against Medicaid? No, I'm not against Medicaid, but I'll tell you what I'm for. I'm for delivering health services for the truly needy with no government involvement. Because where you have government involvement, you invariably have more and more bureaucracy, more and more paperwork, and it ultimately results in very little care being provided to the poor. And Obamacare and the extension of Medicaid is a good example. The problem with Medicaid is most doctors won't take Medicaid patients. Why? Because the government doesn't reimburse them enough. And remember, for Medicaid is a combination federal and state funding. Every dollar the state puts in, the federal government will provide at least a dollar, if not more, depending on the conditions in the state. It's a joint program. Today, if you add the state and federal government, it's approaching $600 billion a year.
$600 billion.
And that is what's happened is we have a bureaucracy in Washington administering it, as well as a bureaucracy in the states that are administering it. But what they reimburse doctors and other health care providers is only a fraction of what they need to cover their cost. And I was listening to a video that I have included. And if you're new to the show, the way you listen to my show is to go to pronkpops.wordpress.com. That's pronkpops, pronkpops.wordpress.com. At the very top, you'll have links, 30 links at least, to my most recent shows. And below that, you'll have a complete archive of all my shows. But under that, you will have my notes for this show, my preparation for this show. I'm rather selective. It consists of photos, articles, graphics, YouTube videos, whatever I looked at. Like for this show on Medicaid, I have... At the very top, I have a chart on what the poverty lines are. In the United States, for example, I'm just using this, and it does vary by state, but for the 48 contiguous states, not counting Hawaii or Alaska, and the District of Columbia, the poverty line for an individual is $11,490. In other words, you're at or below the poverty line if you earn less than that. For a family of four, husband, wife, two children, and this is for 2013, the year we're in, it's $23,550. The statistics are not important because the numbers change, but I have a chart that gives you for eight people what the various numbers are. Now, why is that important? Well, what Obama and the Democratic Party have done is extended Medicaid, extended it to provide healthcare services for people that currently don't get Medicaid. Who are those? Adults. Most of them are able-bodied adults, just like that lady I saw in that corner. She looked generally healthy. I don't know, but it was cold. She was out there, winter's sign. Look a little beaten, but beaten in the sense weathered. It's cold out. I mean, I wouldn't want to sit in that. That's a hard word, not a hard way. It's a difficult way to earn a living, and I think she was earning a living. And it takes, I don't know about you, but I couldn't do that. I'm against accepting welfare of any kind. Won't take it. And I've had my ups and downs, and that's all I'll say. I made a lot of money, and there are times that I didn't have them. And it goes up and down. You just got to keep on plugging. What you don't want to do is become dependent on the government. And today, and let me say this, and this is important. Of the 60 to 70 million that qualify for Medicaid at least 1 month during the year, half of those people are children, at least half. In some states, they're more than half. I'm for children for getting help. It's not their fault that their parents are not earning enough money to be able to afford a doctor. That's why I say the American people have always been a generous people. And they know their tax money is going for this. But prior to the government's massive involvement in the healthcare sector, much of this was done by private as well as private charity, local charities, church charity. We have a system of hospitals, for example, in the United States that were founded by the Catholic Church. We have one here in Dallas. And it's not just the Catholic Church, Baptist, Presbyterian. You know, I used to live near Presbyterian Hospital, a big medical center. A lot of the charity and medical care is provided by charities and churches caring about the well-being of their citizens, the people that are truly needing that need a helping hand. And what the government is trying to do is replace that and discourage charity. They're truly trying to do that. They don't like competition. Why? Because the competition tends to do it a lot better and get better results. You don't believe me? Look at the healthcare.gov website and compare that with your own experience using either your cell phone to complete a transaction or the internet to complete a business transaction. And that website is costing hundreds of millions of dollars. I can still do websites.
And I've been in that business. It's mind-boggling. And I know the challenges of such a site, especially the database challenges as well as the security challenges. The reason I advise you not to go on the site is your identity could very well be stolen. And Consumer Reports recommend staying off that site until all the issues are cleaned up. And they're never going to clean them up. You need to understand this. Any software applications has errors in it. I used to test this stuff, and I was testing a large system, an ERP, Enterprise Resource Planning software. They tend to be the biggest and most complicated. They have thousands of tables, a lot of interdependencies. You change something here, and if you're not careful, it'll screw up something where you never thought it was because there are interdependencies. So you're always going to have errors in software, even applications that are working fine today. I'm not trying to minimize the scope and challenge of that website. It's not your simple website. But here's the point. In the private sector, they have websites. Maybe they don't have the volume, but they have comparable websites. And it's routine to accomplish what I call a transaction. You can buy something. And that's all I was doing, and that's why I raised that as an example. I had two business transactions yesterday, one by cell phone, one over the computer. It took me less than 20 minutes for both. I shopped for major ticket items. I spent nearly $2,000 yesterday. Now, I haven't paid $2,000. Maybe that's a little too high. I don't want to get into the specifics, but I spent over $1,000. But I'm paying it monthly. And guess what? Millions of people are doing that every day, not only in the United States, but throughout the world. That is what free enterprise and capitalism results. Millions of people had jobs to do this. Millions of people still have jobs as a result of the innovation. You know, yes, computers save time, but they open up many, many more opportunities. And that is the success of the free enterprise capitalism. Yet we have a Pope, head of the Catholic Church, criticizing unfettered capitalism. And yeah, I share the Pope's concern that you can't have some unremarked in the news is you have people that die of cold that are homeless. I understand that better than most people. And I will tell you, my heart goes out to those people. But the answer is not to attack what could provide the solution. See, my utter frustration with both the George Bush administration and the Obama administration is not to have full employment in the United States. The answer is not more government. The answer is making sure anyone in the United States that wants to work can find a job, but more importantly, a good paying job. Because if we were at or near full employment, that lady that I passed driving in would have had a job. Wouldn't really have to be on a corner of a street in Dallas begging for money. The answer is not less free enterprise or capitalism. It's more. It is getting the federal government and government out of the way. Government, as Ronald Reagan said, is the problem. It is not the solution. It is not Obamacare. It is not getting more and more and more people on Medicaid. And let me say a word about that, because someone reminded me a very important point. One of the successes of Obamacare is most of the people that have enrolled in Medicaid, and they're getting scared about that. But what do those people get? They get a little card. I have Medicaid. I qualified. I'm poor. I'm under the poverty line. Now, Obama extended to 138%. Actually, it's 133%, but they disregard $5,000 of your income. So the real number, because I've had a little confusion about this, is if you earn less than 138% of the poverty line, are you excited? Can qualify for Medicaid. You don't want to qualify for Medicaid. That's the last thing you want to be able to say. Oh, goody, goody, I qualify for Medicaid. And I'll read you the number. If you earn less than $15,856, you qualify for Medicaid. That's for a single person. For a family of four, it is $32,490. I have a chart that has all these numbers as a percent of the poverty line. Are you excited about it? I'm not excited about it. I would hope you, me, and anyone could earn a lot more money than that. And if we had a full employment economy, most Americans, even the people at the lowest paying jobs, would be earning more money. And that enables them to do a lot of things. Buy their own food, not beg, rent their own apartment, not go to a shelter or live in a car, provide their own insurance, their own clothing. In other words, it provides food, clothing, a roof over your head, and a means of transporting yourself to get a job or get an education or whatever you need to do. And that was brought about by capitalism, not socialism, not big government, and yes, ladies and gentlemen, not by religion. And I'm not trying to offend anybody, but as Limbaugh was pointing out, one of the wealthiest, the Catholic Church, he quoted, and I'm going to be off on the number, that throughout the United States, not the world, just in the United States, it spends like $173 billion. We're talking billion, not million, not hundred. They're a big organization. I understand that. That doesn't surprise me. But they're also one of the biggest owners of real estate in Manhattan. Churches are wealthy, whether it's the Catholic Church, the Baptist Church, the Presbyterian Church, the Episcopal Church, the Church of England, whatever church you belong to, the Mormons, whatever. Why do they have that money? I will tell you why. Because their own parishioners largely are in the business world earning money, and they're very generous with that money, and they tithe, they give to the church that they attend. I'm not happy with this Pope's document attacking capitalism at all. I hope you get that message. I'm very disappointed. I'm not surprised, but I'm disappointed because he's misdiagnosed the problem. And if you misdiagnose the problem, you're not going to be able to solve it because you're solving the wrong problem. Yes, we have inequality of income and wealth throughout the world. We've always had it. The answer is to raise up everybody from the poorest to the middle class and above. That's my solution. It is more capitalism. It's more free enterprise. And it's definitely less government. If you look at the federal the budget today, what do you see? And these numbers, I didn't review them before the top of the show. But the United States has become a warfare welfare state. If you add up Social Security, Medicare, Medicaid, welfare programs, and the budget of the Defense Department, and the debt required to service it, you're over two-thirds of the federal government right there. Let me say that again. Add up your entitlement programs, such as the big ones, Social Security and Medicare, as well as Medicaid and now Obamacare, and then you add up all the welfare programs and the Department of Defense and the national debt, because most of this spending has to be paid for by debt. About 35% of it has to be paid by going into debt. We're living way beyond the means of the American people to support this level of government. More than two-thirds goes to either war or welfare. Now, I know some of you are going to object, well, Social Security is not a welfare program because I paid into it. Yes, I understand that. I'm really not in favor of Social Security or Medicare or Medicaid. And you're probably staring, well, they're popular programs. Yeah, and they're going broke. They're going broke. And I'm a beneficiary of both of them. And I know that both of those programs will, within a decade or less, be running such massive deficits, they're going to have to restructure them, which means they're going to have to cut the benefits, increase taxes, usually increase taxes, so they're going to try to save it. There's no way they can save it, folks. When your unfunded liabilities for Social Security, Medicaid, Obamacare is over $120 trillion, there's no way to save it. The gross national product of the United States for this year will be somewhere between $16 and $17 trillion. The unfunded liabilities means they don't have the money to pay for future benefits is over $120 trillion, and that is not the low number. There's a range of estimates. Some would say it's over $130 trillion or more. Those programs are actuarially unsound. In other words, they can't pay the benefits. And increasingly, more and more and more of the federal government has to, the budgets have to go for Social Security, Medicare, Medicaid, and welfare programs. So-called mandatory spending today is roughly two-thirds as well. Defense is not, but if you look at what's so-called, the budget of the United States is divided into two types of spending, mandatory and discretionary. Mandatory means there's a program in existence that if you qualify for it, such as Medicaid, you get the benefit. And Medicaid is a big one, especially in the state as well as the federal level. But here's the problem. So what if you qualify and you have that card? If you're really sick, what do you need? Do you need a card? Is a card going to do any good for you? I have a card in my wallet, one of these cards, not for Medicaid, for Medicare. Is it going to do me any good if I can't get a doctor or a hospital to treat me? And that's exactly the problem of people that are poor, indigent today. Yeah, there are some doctors in every city that will help you, but most will not. Why? It's not because they're cold-hearted. It's because the government and its paperwork and its regulations and what they reimburse, doctors don't want anything to do with it. It's more trouble than it's worth. You know, the doctor that has set up a clinic and it's not under Medicaid, they treat the poor. People walk in, and they only treat people that qualify for Medicaid. They're not treating them under Medicaid. They're not getting involved with that. But these are successful doctors that have their own practice. They have a separate clinic for people that are on Medicaid. That's the only ones they treat at that clinic, and there's no charge. In other words, they're being charitable. They're good-intentioned, well-intentioned people, well-meaning people. They don't want to be involved with Medicaid. It's not worth the trouble. But they want to treat the truly needy, and they're doing that. And one of the suggestions this woman doctor said, and she says, I've talked with other doctors, would doctors be willing to spend 4 hours a week in one of these clinics? In other words, devote their time, no charge, for the truly needy, people that qualify for Medicaid, if the state paid for their medical malpractice insurance? She said most of the doctors she talked to said yes. And there's a reason for this. One of the expenses of any medical practice is malpractice insurance to cover the possibility of them being sued by attorneys when doctors make mistakes. Listen, everybody makes mistakes. The problem is you have a profession, the law profession, that will go after doctors for making a mistake. And accidents happen, mistakes happen. But because of it, a big expense, not the only expense, but a big expense of any medical practice is the cost of malpractice insurance. So 4 hours, let's multiply by 50. That's 200 hours a year. They'd be willing to do that. And I can see why. Yeah, they're getting a benefit. They don't have to pay for malpractice insurance because the state picks it up. But in exchange for that, they know they would be treating the truly needy, the people that are below the poverty, that qualify for Medicaid and can't find doctors. You see, you can feel real good about yourself, and I'm sure the president feels good about himself, and all the progressive Democrats feel good about. We've extended Medicaid. And the estimates is that extension will add at least 15 million people, at least 15 million, maybe more. Because what has the success been of the Obamacare? The big success is many, many people are enrolling in Medicaid by multiple factors. Now, those are the early enrollees. What's the problem? You got two problems. One, so what? If you can't get good health, you can't find a doctor that'll treat. You can't find a surgeon to do the operation. You can't find a hospital that wants to treat you or provide the operation. You see, it's a style over substance question. The style is you got a card. We're doing something for the poor. They all have a card. They all are eligible for Medicaid. But that's not the question. As a matter of fact, that's a distraction. What you really want to know are the people that truly need and cannot afford the medical care, the health care, are getting that good health care? And the answer is they're not. They are not. The incentives are all wrong. Doctors are being discouraged from taking Medicaid patients for the simple reason the government doesn't pay them enough money. And if they don't do it right, they can be fined. They don't fill out the paperwork right. And the concern of everyone should be, guess what? That is starting to happen with Medicare. Remember, Medicaid is for the poor, people below the poverty line. Medicare is for the elderly, people above 65. And now, because of the reimbursement that they get on Medicare, fewer doctors are taking Medicare patients. It's not as bad. It doesn't even approach the Medicaid situation. But the concern is, if the government dramatically reduces reimbursement in the Medicare area, the same thing you have in Medicaid will happen to Medicare patients. And the suspicion is, and I think a valid suspicion, that is exactly what Obama and the Obamacare wants to accomplish. And remember, Obamacare is my short way of saying the Patient Protection and Affordable Care Act. It doesn't protect the patients, and it's not affordable. It's a lot more expensive. So the answer, ladies and gentlemen, is not more and more government. That never ends well. Government is about controlling you and me. It is about monopoly, not about competition. It's not, believe me, it is not for free enterprise. And many of the people are well-meaning and well-intentioned, truly think that the answer is more government. Yet history has shown time and time again, it doesn't work. Governments kill people. Governments start war. Governments kill their own people and the people of other nations, not capitalism. And yes, I understand there are certain situations where products can kill people. That is the exception, not the rule. Governments, especially, just look at the last century. The number of people have died in world wars, in all wars. People have died in concentration camps. People that have died with deliberate policies of starving whole groups of people. It's called democide, death by government. Government is the problem. Ronald Reagan had it right. Government is the problem, and government is not the solution. The Pope must be very proud of America with its Obamacare. You see, we don't have unfettered capitalism in the United States. What we have in the United States today is a warfare and welfare state. I'm against a warfare and welfare state. I'm for the individual, not the collective. I favor a peace and prosperity state, which I think the Pope would support. The problem with the Pope's message and writing is he apparently has some Marxist collectivist advisors, I'm sure he does, that don't understand economics, do not understand markets, do not understand capitalism, and do not understand the benefits of a free market economy in terms of raising up the poor so they're no longer poor, so they have an opportunity to work and realize their dreams, as opposed to having dreams and then dying with the same dream. People are fleeing countries, but they're fleeing to the United States. Unfortunately, the United States has increasingly become very similar to the nations that they're fleeing from. That is what is really discouraging to me. I want to wish you a happy Thanksgiving and a prosperous new year. Enjoy your holidays. I have a paper to write, and it's going to be on poverty and hunger. And I won't get into that, but that's just a note. So I'll be doing a lot of reading on what I've been talking about today. But I wish you a productive Thanksgiving, and be thankful for what you have. And I wish that lady on the corner, someone would really help her out and get her a full-time job. That's what she really needs. Because with a full-time job, she doesn't have to be begging on a corner from people in cars. And I have the same problem with that as the Pope does. But the answer is a good-paying job. It is not more government. You are listening to KDUX Web Radio, broadcasting live from Richland College in Dallas, Texas. We are the voice of Richland College, My name is Raymond Thomas Pronk, the presenter of the Pronk Pop Show. Views expressed on this show are my own, unless otherwise stated, and do not reflect the opinion of anyone at KDUX, Richland College, or the DCCD. Thank you for listening. Enjoy your Thanksgiving vacation. Remember, the campus is closed starting 11 o'clock tonight and will not be open until 6 o'clock Monday. So don't come to the campus. Have a nice Thanksgiving.